You hear a different number. So about a decade ago, there was a big federally funded study that found that there are about 800,000 reported missing child cases per year. That includes cases where the child kind of misses their curfew and the parents call the police and freak out, and it's actually nothing. The child isn't really missing in any way. And also more serious cases, includes runaways, family abductions, non-family abductions. The cases that usually get the most media attention are called stereotypical abduction. So that's where some stranger grabs a kid off the street. And that happens maybe on the order of 100 times a year. So relatively rare compared to the number of missing child reports. If you look at cases listed with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, at any given point in time, it's around 2,000 to 3,000 cases that are currently listed. Those tend to be longer-term cases, cases that haven't been resolved over a long period of time.
What is that time period usually? What makes it long-term? Because, I mean, some parents would like to say, oh, well, you know, a couple days or a week, but...
That's certainly true. I mean, any time a child goes missing, it's, of course, frightening for the parents. But the cases that are currently listed with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, they go up immediately, but, of course, once the child is recovered, they come right back down. So that's why the cases that are predominate in that database are cases that are longer-term cases. It's not that they aren't considered important if they are resolved quickly. It's just that the cases that aren't solved accumulate in that database. The national crime statistics collected by the FBI, at any given point in time, there are around 80,000 active missing persons cases, and about half of those are adults, half of those are children.
What are the statistics for recovery? Like, what's the percentage?
Most children who go missing out of that 800,000 number are recovered. Non-family abductions, I believe the number is over 99% are recovered within a day. So most non-family abductions are handled very, very quickly.
So your research looks at longer-term cases and how age progression photographs assist in the recovery.
That's right. So age progression, of course, is only used in cases where the child has been missing for a relatively long period of time. I believe the standard practice is to do an age progression after a child's been gone for 3 years. And then they're updated about every 3 years.
So how does age progression work?
Well, there are different techniques. So it's an umbrella term used to refer to a number of different techniques. One dimension you can think about is who is doing the age progression. So there are computer-based systems for doing age progression where a technician basically identifies a set of landmarks on the photograph of the child. And then computer algorithms are used to try to age the face. And then there are age progression techniques that are done by forensic artists who will either use sketch techniques or more often than not, they'll use graphic art techniques to take the photograph and alter the appearance to try to produce what the child looks like at the older age. Both of those sets of techniques use information about average growth rates of children's faces. So you can say, you know, on average, how much does a child's jaw grow from age 5 to age 10? And those averages are applied to the photograph. And both artists and computer techniques also take advantage of similarities between children and their biological relatives. So if you know that a child went missing when he was 5 and he's now 12, and you know that child's uncle looked a certain way at age 12, that information may be incorporated into the age progression.
Okay. So your research doesn't – what does your research focus on? It's not necessarily the actual age progression techniques. Mm-hmm. It's more how explain how the people that are looking at the pictures, how it.
Well, I'm a cognitive psychologist, so what I'm interested in is memory and perception. So our research looks at the degree to which someone can recognize an individual based on an age progression. So most of our studies include three conditions. We'll have a condition where people study outdated photographs of children. And then later on, they're tested with those same people at a later age. We then have a condition where people study a person at a later age and then are tested with a different picture of them at that exact same age, right? So that's the easiest of the conditions. I see a picture of you at your current age, and then I see another picture of you at that same age, and can I
recognize me on Friday night and then me yesterday?
Exactly right, yeah. Yeah. And then the third condition is to show people, have people study a picture, a age progression of you to your current age, but that was based on a childhood photograph of you. And then see if they can recognize you based on the childhood age progressed photograph.
This is something that you've been looking at for a while.
We've been looking at for a few years now. That's right.
Okay. So what is this grant? Because you've recently received a grant from the National Scientific Foundation.
Yes, the National Science Foundation.
National Science Foundation.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And so what is this going to allow you to do?
Well, we're interested in coming up with approaches that would make age progressions more effective, and in particular. The idea behind the grant is that if you think about how age progressions are produced, you know, what we just talked about, they're based largely on the idea that if you know the average growth rate of a child's face over time, that you can make a good guess of what that child may look like at a later period of time. That's a reasonable assumption, but of course it's based on population averages, and how much the average child's growth face grows. And of course there's a large amount of variability in growth rates. So the grant is testing the idea that it may be beneficial to show people not just a single age progression, but multiple age progressions showing a variety of different ways that the person may look. So if I was trying to see if somebody could recognize you based on an age progression, I might present them with 10 different age progressions, all based on slightly different assumptions of how your face changed over time, with the idea that maybe one of those will match your current appearance more. So we're looking at that idea that presenting multiple age progressions can improve recognition.
You say that you're a cognitive memory psychologist.
That's right.
But you could probably – why working with missing children?
Well, I've been interested in a long time in ways in which memory can be accurate and ways in which memory can be inaccurate. That's my basic science interest. And I've also been interested in applications of basic memory research. So I've done work on false memories. I've done work on eyewitness identification. A few years back, I started to get interested in the question of how well someone can recognize an individual that they've been told to be on the lookout for. So if you're watching the evening news and someone just escaped from prison and they show you that person's picture and they say, if you see this person, you know, call authorities because this person's very dangerous. And then later that day or the next day, you were walking down the street and that person walked right past you. You know, how likely would you be to notice that person?
I don't feel like I would notice that person.
Yeah,
in fact,
we've done field experiments where we set up that exact situation. We show students pictures of someone and say, if you see this person on campus, contact us and you can win a $200 prize. And then we set up a scenario where they do pass that person. And we get identification rates of on the order of 3-5% usually. So,
yeah, that's nothing.
Yeah, very very low, although I always caution people that if that photograph is shown to tens of thousands of people, 5% of 10,000 people might be a lot. Anyway, I started getting interested in that question, right? How well can someone recognize someone based, how likely is someone to notice someone they've been told to be on the lookout for? The two obvious applications of that are wanted fugitives and missing persons, both missing children and missing adults. And that led me to start thinking about different factors that could influence recognition in those circumstances. Age progression of missing children is one of them. We've also done a little bit of work looking at composite images created based on witness descriptions and a number of other circumstances as well.
So in the cases that they are used, aren't that successful? I mean, with the younger children?
It's hard to get data on it. Mm-hmm. There are anecdotal cases where children have been recovered and the recovery is attributed to an age progression. The experimental studies that we've done where we show people age progressions and see whether they can identify someone based on the age progression, we get identification rates that are better than chance, which is that's good. But we also get identification rates better than chance if we just show an outdated photograph. And, in fact, we haven't found conditions yet where we find a difference between those two conditions.
How – silly question, but I guess they do work. But the bulletin boards at Walmart and Harps and stuff, are those really successful? I mean, I guess they are because they still continue to use them.
I think there's you know, power in numbers. We've done – studies on bulletin boards and the extent to which people even look at bulletin boards and find that most people walk past them without looking.
I think I do.
Yeah. And that in those studies we've stopped shoppers outside of grocery stores and then we've shown them pictures and asked them to pick out the kids that were shown on the posters in the grocery stores and found people don't do better than chance at that. Again, if you think about the example you just gave of Walmart and how many millions of customers Walmart gets, a relatively low identification rate can lead to some recoveries. But what we hope to do in our research is increase that percentage a little bit so that it's not a small percentage of millions of people, but a larger percentage of millions of people.
And so would you then, like on those bulletin boards, you would just include more than one picture?
Yeah, the specific technique that we're looking at is a video-based presentation in which the images are presented sequentially in an animated format where the one image turns into the other image.
Okay.
Although, on a bulletin board, that would be harder to do.
But you could do it on – I mean, Walmart has those –
That's right.
TVs at
That's
the
right.
checkout or...
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. So there could be a animated bulletin board, for instance, that you could come up with.
So what is your hope at the end of this, at the end of your 3 years?
Well, we want to understand a little bit better about how age progressions work. We want to understand a little bit about variations in the effectiveness of age progressions with different techniques and with different artists and maybe with different experience levels of artists. And ultimately, we'd like to improve rates of recoveries of missing kids to the extent that we can.
This is just now – I mean, you're just now getting started on this, right?
Yeah, the grant was just awarded, we are in the process of collecting the family photographs right now and recruiting artists. And we'll be doing data collection hopefully in the fall.
Okay. I don't think I have anything else.
Okay, fantastic.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you.